Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 23rd, 2010. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week highlights from the Great American Beer Festival, Andy Sparks and I headed to Colorado this past week to sample a bit of beer culture and to make the every other year pilgrimage that we do to the GABF. While we were out there, we actually recorded some things for you, and I'll share some of that this week. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. On Facebook, I am facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site, too, so you can support them and us at the same time. And you can find out our Basic Brewing iPhone app on the iTunes Store. And if you're a BlackBerry user, we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, too. I want to start out with something that I forgot last week, frankly. I had other things on my mind, and I forgot to mention this. I got a note from Andy Davison down there in Australia, who wanted me to mention the upcoming Australian National Homebrewing Conference. Andy says the conference will run this year from the 28th of October to the 30th of October in Melbourne, or Melbourne, I think, is maybe I've been suggested to say Melbourne, so I will. Maybe not by Andy. I can't remember who told me that. Anyway, Australian National Homebrewing Conference will run, like I say, October 28th to 30th. And Andy says it will largely run to a similar format to 2008 with two notable additions. First is a demonstration session in cooking with beer being run by a past MasterChef finalist and beer lover, Chris Badenoch, and local media and movie personality Paul Mercurio. I hope I'm getting close to all these pronounced. It seems like I can't pronounce anything today. I've just had coffee, I swear. The second, Andy says, the second is that we are running the first beer judge calibration dinner the evening before the Australian Amateur Brewing Championship, hosted by Gordon Strong and Randy Mosher. Cool. Andy says there are only a few tickets left at this stage. All the information about the conference and its activities is available on our website. That's anhc.com.au. anhc.com.au. Sounds like a fun time. Thanks, Andy, for letting us know. Let us know if anything cool happens down there. I also get a note from Brian, who lives in the Chicago area, on the subject of trisodium phosphate, or TSP. Brian says, just wanted to give you the heads up that a lot of the TSP sold now in the U.S. is actually phosphate-free TSP. As crazy as that sounds, trisodium phosphate without the phosphate is what exactly? Brian says. The product is actually typically sold in its place is 100% sodium metasilicate, which is also a strong base. Additionally, sodium metasilicate is the active ingredient in PBW. PBW is composed basically of a strong base and surfactants, or soap. Brian says, what all this means to homebrewers is that you can easily make a homemade version of PBW with some ratio of sodium metasilicate and OxyClean. Brian says, I use 2-to-1 and love it. Here's a disclaimer from me, James. I am not a chemist, and I don't know if Brian is either. So use caution with Brian's recipe, just in case. Brian, I appreciate that, Brian. Brian sent me a link to the material safety data sheet on PBW, and under hazardous ingredients, it does list sodium metasilicate, but under composition, it says silicates, phosphates, and surfactants. So what's going on there? Then there's this from Chris in Clinton Township, Michigan. Chris says, during the opening comments of the Beehive Brew-Off episode on 8-26-10, one of your listeners was confused about lagering and ale. When I first started brewing, the kit that I had bought suggested that I lager my ales also. When I looked into this, they meant that I should cold condition my ales. What I usually do is allow my ale to ferment fully at normal ale temperature. Then I bottle and allow it to carb at room temperature for about 2 weeks. Afterwards, I'll put the beer into the fridge for 2 weeks. This is the step that the directions that I had meant when they said lagering. And Chris says, I'm a relatively new brewer, so I don't claim to know the science behind what's going on, but in my experience, this makes a difference. I brewed an oatmeal stout once, and I got impatient and tasted it after it had been in the lager-slash-cold-conditioning phase of my process for only a week. It tasted much different than it did after being in the fridge for 2 weeks. Like I said, I have no idea what's going on during that time, but what I do know is that lagering or cold conditioning my ales makes a positive difference. Well, thanks, Chris. I think that that goes along the lines of what I recommended on that show. You know, ferment at room at ale temperature, condition at room temperature, and then put the bottles in the fridge and see what happens. Good to hear it's a technique that you've tried, and it does make a difference. I've experienced it too. Changes do tend to occur to beers over time in the fridge, and it'd be interesting to know for sure if it's the yeast that's still in the bottle that's actually doing the changing, or if it's just a physical effect of the cold temperature. This comes from Danny. Danny says, I found myself on bottling day without the priming sugar I'm accustomed to, corn sugar. I looked online and saw that I had enough honey in the house to get the job done. Since I happen to be interested in meads and braggots, I thought this would be a good test to see how honey reacts in the brew. He says, I used a third a cup of unrefined honey to 2 cups of water. Now, the flavor of the Oktoberfest is absolutely amazing, but when you open one, it sounds like a pop gun, and when you pour, the head is unreal. I'll get 2 inches of beer and a glass of foam. Are these going to explode? Or should I just relax and enjoy an overly frothy homebrew? Well, Danny, I'd stick them in the fridge if I were you. If they're getting that carbonated, I wouldn't wait to see if you've got some potential bottle bombs on your hand. Plus, Oktoberfests probably shouldn't be that carbonated anyway. So, in my opinion, you're not gaining anything by not chilling them right away. And in my opinion, better safe than sorry. So stick them in the fridge and enjoy them. Okay, now on to the Great American Beer Festival stuff. First of all, I want to say thanks and howdy to everybody who stopped us to say hello. And it's always so cool to talk to people in person that we've been corresponding with via email or just having a one-way conversation like we're having right now. Andy, Steve, and I really get a boost when we get to shake your hand in person. So everybody that we met was incredibly nice, and it's great to be a part of the homebrewing community. So I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to say hi when we were there. It was the 29th annual Great American Beer Festival. More than 2,200 beers, 462 U.S. breweries, 49,000 attendees. Pretty overwhelming. But in addition to the professional brewers, homebrewers are featured every year, too. Every year, homebrewers pair with professional brewers for the Pro-Am competition. This year, 75 beers were entered into the Pro-Am competition. That means 75 homebrewers got to produce their recipes on pro gear and enter them into this competition. We sampled many of those, and they were all very tasty, I have to say. Now, to get a little insight into the Pro-Am competition, we snagged Jeff Swearingen, one of the homebrewers that we actually know from Oklahoma.
My name is Jeff Swearingen. I'm a member of Fellowship of Oklahoma Alemakers, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I brewed smoked porter with Chalk Beer Company. So, and Chalk's out of Krebs, Oklahoma, southeast Oklahoma. So.
This is the first time that you've taken part in the Pro-Am competition?
Yeah, this is my first year doing the Pro-Am. It's the sixth year that the Pro-Am's been held. And this year they've got over about 75 entries, which makes it the largest Pro-Am to date.
So how did you get involved in the competition?
Well, Chalk put out a notice for the AHA competitions. They were looking for homebrewers that were interested in entering beers, and they pretty well left a wide gamut of styles for us to whatever we wanted to brew. And so they had about 50 entries from all of Oklahoma. And so they had a tasting panel, and they just kind of went through round robin, choosing different ones that they liked and maybe would be able to work on their system to brew. And so it was kind of unique. It came down to about 10 beers, and the brewmaster, Michael Lally, he was the steward, so he enjoyed doing the stewarding and getting to taste the beers as they went along. And they come down to the top three beers, and I was lucky enough to have two of them in the final three. So
tell us about your beer that you entered.
Okay, the smoke porter, my recipe is called the smoke signal porter, and it's a base of traditional beechwood smoke, the Weyermann smoke malt, and then I home smoked some Munich with cherry wood. And so I did about 20 pounds of cherry wood, and then I used alder in the original recipe, but when we scaled it up, we couldn't get the alder, so we used the beech wood, which both of them were kind of mild. The alder wood and the beech wood's kind of really mild smokes. So, and then we infused it with the cherry, so you got the cherry smoke, the beech wood, and then we used we've got German chocolate in the recipe, and a little bit of Kara Munich malt to give it a nice little caramel. So good balance. Columbus hops, you know, gives it a good firm bitterness, but doesn't overwhelm anything. So we were proud of it. We thought it turned out pretty good. My homebrew recipe, in comparison, I think this one seems to be aging a little quicker than my homebrew did. My homebrew took about 6 months. I thought, man, this is terrible. It's not going to turn out like I wanted it to. It was too smoky. But time the competition rolled around, it just happened to luck out and it'd be ready in time. And the brewer really liked it. So,
what was it like brewing with the professionals on their system?
Oh, it was a total blast. We did a double batch, and I was down for the first batch. And gosh, the brew house just smelled awesome. We had all that smoke malt in the mash tun, and I mean, you could smell it way out in the parking lot when you went there. So all the smoke malt, and BJ, the assistant brewer, he's like the hardest working guy in business, you know. He had our mash put together, and we went through all the calibrations, and there was a little bit of, you know, when you scale up a recipe, there's a little bit of difference in trying to scale up a large recipe. So it's a little different than my homebrew, but like I said, we were happy with it. But getting to brew down at Chalk was an awesome experience. I really enjoyed it. They're really a great bunch of guys. So, and then coming up here, you know, getting the brewer's pass and doing the whole thing, it's been a good time. They treated me really well, and it's been a good experience. They're going to do their competition again in February, so we'll get to start it all over again. And they decide they like smoked beer, so they're limiting the category this year just to smoked beers because they want to do another one. So they put out the word, and in February they're going to have the contest. And I had a little bit of leftover beechwood from the smoked porter recipe, so I'm going to brew up a German rock beer to take down. They said I'm ineligible for the second one since I won the first one. So I said, well, I'll come down and judge for you. How about that?
So did brewing with the pros give you an itch to become a pro brewer yourself?
No, I actually brewed. I went to Siebel and I did the short course. So I'd done it before when I was in college. And I went from home brewing, did professional for about 2 years. And then as assistant brewer for Tulsa Brewing Company. And then went back to home brewing. Yeah, those guys, I respect them because day in and day out, they're working really hard. You know, these brewers up here, you know, they put it out on the line, you know, with their beers. And, you know, it's an incredible experience for, you know, the connection between the home brewing community and the brewing community is so strong, and this is just part of the whole culmination of it.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
Sure. Enjoyed it.
Thanks to Jeff. Now, the unfortunately for Jeff, he didn't win. The people who did win, however, I have right here in front of me, the gold medal for the GABF Pro-Am competition went to a beer called Red Velvet from Eagle Rock Brewery in Los Angeles, California. The brewmaster was the Eagle Rock Brewery brew team. The AHA member was Donnie Hummel. Congratulations. Silver medal went to Ride Hard, that's R-Y-E-D, Ride Hard and Put Away Wet from Rockyard Brewing Company, Castle Rock, Colorado. The brewmaster was Jim Stenson, and the AHA member was Adam Glazer. And the bronze went to a Robust Porter from Wormtown Brewing Company in Worcester, Massachusetts. Ben Retch, I believe, was the brewmaster, and the AHA member was Keith Antall. Congratulations, everybody. Now, Andy and I have decided that every other year is good for us to attend the Great American Beer Festival. Because one danger when you're a journalist, and stop laughing, I do consider myself a journalist. I do have a degree in journalism and everything, and professional experience, and an award. But one danger with covering an event year after year is that you can get stale. It always seems like the same story over and over and over again, and it gets tough to find new angles, even with something as fun to go to as this. Covering it gets tricky. Plus, when Andy and I went to GABF in 2005, I believe that we were the first podcast to cover the event. Like I say, that's what I believe, and no one has corrected me so far. Now, there are tons of podcasts, bloggers, tweeters, and so on nowadays, so that they all converge on Denver every year for the Great American Beer Festival. And it's definitely a good thing for good beer to get that much attention, but it makes it tricky to find some way to find and deliver information that everybody else isn't doing, that's different from what everybody else is doing. So Andy and I were walking around the hall, sampling every now and then, looking for our angle that we're going to do this year, when we came upon the Schorts Brewing Company booth. Now, Schorts is from Bel Air, Michigan, and here's what they had on tap in their booth. A Spruce Pilsner, that's an Imperial Pilsner with blue spruce tips. The Wizard, which is a barley wine aged on raisins. Their Anniversary Ale, which is a blood orange wheat wine, dry hopped and spiced with green peppercorns. And they had a Key Lime Pie beer, and they had another one that I think had licorice in it. And that's when I said, hey, let's talk to these guys. They're doing something different. If we want a different angle on the GABF, let's talk to a few brewers who are doing some different things. So especially, of course, we're going to taste the beer first because, you know, different's not necessarily good. If it tastes bad and it's different, it doesn't count. But we sampled their beers and they were good. So we pulled the Schorts guys aside for just a couple of minutes.
Kurt Gunsfiller, Schorts Brewing Company up in Bel Air, Michigan.
James Short, Schorts Brewing Company, Bel Air, Michigan.
I mean, everybody can make a Pilsner. We like to try to go out of the box with a lot of our beers. Obviously, we can make some great beers to begin with. But if you're coming to a festival like this, people want something extra. So we like to try to bring a lot of our bigger hitters. We like to think out of the box on a lot of our beers. Some people might think it's, you know, not really beer, but, you know,
or they think it's just too over the top for them. There's other people, they either love it or they hate it. I mean, we go to the extreme, and, you know, that's just how we do it.
I guess a lot of people think of it kind of like a gimmick beer, you know, because they've got really wild flavors. But I tried the Wizard. It was awesome.
That's what we brew the beer that we think we would want to drink too. I mean, obviously, I don't want to brew a beer that I don't like and then have to try to sell it to someone. I want to make a beer that I want to honestly tell them, this is a great beer. It's, you know, I can describe it to them. I like it. That way, I'm not trying to, you know, be fake about something. Brew it. You know, it might not be for everybody, but, you know, beer's growing. Yeah, beer's growing so much that, I mean, why not think outside the box, you know?
When you're working with an ingredient that you've never used before, like spruce, how do you approach it?
Wing it. We wing it. We just see what works.
A lot of times, we'll just take, you know, we might just mix up, like, you know, a gallon or two, just see how it blends. If it works, kind of just, like, go for it and see how it turns out.
We take a sample from a glass, we'll add a little bit until it's just right, and then we'll kind of guess on how much that's going to go into a 15-barrel or a 7-barrel system.
Awesome. So is that the size of your system? Is it a...
We have two systems. We have a 7-barrel brew house in Bel Air, Michigan. That's at our brew pub. And then we also have a 30-barrel system at our production facility in Elk Rapids, which is about 30 minutes from Bel Air. So a lot of times what we'll do is if we're trying a new beer, we'll brew it up on our 7-barrel system. And then if it does well, then we'll brew it on our big system. And usually we'll either bottle it or send out more kegs of it that way.
Where in the country can you get your beers? Where are you distributed to?
Just in the state of Michigan.
Yep. We've got so many requests to go out of the state, but right now we can't even keep up with Michigan. So.
We can order it online and we can send it out, though.
Not to Arkansas.
Unfortunately not. We're so busy right now. We're into this company 6 years now, and we're still growing, so... like I said, it's hard keeping up, but we're doing our best.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, of course, we sampled many traditional styles while we were there, and Andy was especially looking for saisons and a few sour beers and such as that. But it was really the odd ones that we wanted to check out and talk to the brewers and bring to you. So we wandered by the Three Skulls booth. Three Skulls is from Seattle, and I saw the name Buccaneer Bacon on the list of beers, and I couldn't resist. I tasted it. It was great, and we talked to Jeff Smiley of Three Skulls.
So you have a beer called Buccaneer Bacon.
Yes.
So tell us about this beer.
This beer is actually the malt is primarily a Bamberg, Germany smoked malt beer. With a little bit of bacon in it. Campfire-y, yummy, tasty lager. It's about 5% alcohol. Very drinkable. Not a giant smack-in-the-face kind of beer. Totally tasty.
So how much is it bacon and how much is it smoked malt?
It's the malt. The smoked malt that goes in this is 85% of the malt is smoked malt.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of smoked malt. So the primary constituent of the flavor is actually from the smoked malt. And it's fantastic. It's actually Beechwood smoked malt. There's only one town in Germany that does smoked beers, and that's Bamberg. And my malt comes straight from Bamberg. So it's like, it's very German. It's unique. And the bacon adds just a little bit of flavor to it. It's quite yummy.
So how did you work your way up to 85% smoked malt?
Well, you know... I actually know the folks that make the malt, so they kind of get, you know, help me out with, it's like, here's what I want to make. What do you think? What do I need to do? And they were like, okay, you need to have the vast majority of your malt be the smoked malt and, you know, just back it up with the other, like, crystal malts and that kind of stuff. And they were very helpful.
Well, that's really interesting because I think most of the time, most people think that smoked malt should be used sparingly.
And that's usually true. It's usually peat smoked malt, which is generally comes from Ireland or like Scottish malt. And generally that stuff, yeah, you use like like in home brewing. I don't use it in the brewery because it's just overpowering. But when I was home brewing, I'd do like a pound out of 25 pounds and it would be overwhelming. So that's not unusual for that to be the case. But yeah, in Germany, it's a different story. These guys, you know, well, Germans are about drinkable beers. So they would never make a malt of that nature. It just doesn't, it's not what they do. In fact, you know, doing a smoked malt at all in Germany is just weird. You know, that's why there's only one town that does it.
Yes. I think you've made the ultimate breakfast beer.
I think so. Actually, breakfast beer is good. My favorite, though, is you take brats and you cook it in the beer. Oh, my God.
What about adding maple syrup to the beer? A little maple sugar.
You know, I don't know about that. My gut says that wouldn't be so good. But you know what? We're brewers in America. We try all kinds of crazy things. So it's like, why not?
Probably a good thing for a home brewer to try first.
What's that?
Probably a good thing for a home brewer to try first.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, I mean, even when we do stuff, I mean, I still pull out my home brewing system when I want to test beers out. That's what I do.
Okay.
You know, I make 5 gallons at a time, just like I always have. And I, you know, I try it out and see what I think, you know, and I still love doing that. It's you know, it's quite nice. Oh, sure. It's nice to meet you guys.
Thanks. Great.
Yeah.
I'd like another ounce, please.
So he'll put a bit of bacon and 85% smoked malt in his beer, but no maple? He kind of made a face. He turned up his nose at putting maple in the beer. I don't know. I put bacon, maple, and then some oats in there to round out the whole breakfast theme, if it were me. And it may be me. Sounds like a good idea. Now, you know, you may know how much fun Steve Wilkes and I have had with chili beers over the past few years. We've played with them a bit, and Steve has really made one really wonderful one that's hit a home run in my mind. But when someone told me there was a good chili beer over at Six Rivers Brewing Company from McKinleyville, California, we headed over there, and their chili beer was wonderful. We talked to assistant brewer Mike Lisignoli.
I'm Mike. I'm from Six Rivers Brewing Company, Northern California. And we do chili pepper ale, raspberry lambic, Cabernet lambic made with Cabernet grapes. Also, we do the smoky chili porter with smoked chili peppers. And we also do a strawberry wheat.
Talk to us about the chili beer.
So, with the chili beer, what we're doing is we take some habaneros, some jalapenos, serranos, and Anaheims, and we fix that together in a secret way. And then we take a nylon knee-high, like you can buy at any store, and we fill that with the Cuisinarted chilies, and then we put those in each keg. So it's one keg at a time. And we'll rack that off into a keg, and we'll let it sit for approximately a week. And then we'll filter that off of the keg. We'll rack it into 3 5-gallons, and we'll serve it up at the bar. So depending on how long it's been in the keg determines how spicy it may be. So you could get a lighter spiced one, or it could be really, really hot. And the way that we do that, you know, we can't disclose our technique, but if you try any other chili pepper ale, it's not as hot. And that's our secret, is we can really, really make it hot.
So how do you get that balance? I mean, does the beer become hotter and hotter as it sits on the chilies?
So the beer becomes hotter as it sits on the chili. It's basic, are just basic wheat ale, and as we put it into the keg, the longer we leave it there, the hotter it's going to become. So if we left it in a keg for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, it would burn you to death. But a lot of times, you know, depending on supply and demand, we'll rack it off a little earlier.
So your chili beer is really good in that it is balanced. It is not all about the heat. There is a significant amount of body in the beer, and so it is a kind of a well-rounded beer. What's the malt backbone like?
Well, I mean, it's a heavy wheat beer, so it's, you know, it's 50-50 with wheat and barley. So with that heaviness of the wheat and the creaminess of the wheat, that creates a greater balance with the chili pepper as opposed to maybe like a chili pepper pale or a chili pepper blonde. You lose that with like a Hefeweizen type of beer. You get that creaminess, and that adds to a better balance.
So how do you go about selecting the balance of chilies? I mean, how do you do a tasting of what chilies?
It's definitely eyeballed, and it's done on a small scale, so every chili beer is going to be different. I mean, some are a lot hotter, some are a lot softer. It's basically, you know, we have our standard recipe, and then we go from there.
That's awesome. Talk about your sour grapes beer.
The sour grapes is a real unique beer that, you know, a lot of breweries can't do. For instance, they can't get the grapes. So a friend of ours is a winemaker, and he supplied us with the Cabernet grapes, which we put, basically we filtered a triple Belgian on top of 400 pounds of Cabernet grapes for a 7-barrel batch. We left that in the bright tank for about 6 or 7 months. And then we took that beer and we racked it into port barrels and Cabernet barrels. And we let it sit there for about a year and a half. And then we add some lactobacillus to it to give it a little bit of that sour edge so the wine's not too sweet. And from there, I mean, you get a beer you'll never see again.
It's quite delicious.
So with a 7-barrel system, I mean, that for a professional brewery, that's on the lower end.
That is definitely on the lower end. So it's very hard to make a beer like that, especially when you consider tank space on such a small brew system. So we sacrifice our other beers to make our specialty beers. The raspberry, the chili, the Kona Porter, the strawberry wheat. Those are beers that we're moving 2 or 3 times after we filter them, just to get them off the fruit and tasting where we want them to be.
That's awesome. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. It's been great. I love you guys. Drink
Thanks.
More beer.
I have a feeling, for some reason, that I'm going to be buying some knee-high stockings for a keg in the near future. So there were literally thousands of good beers, and that's just a taste of what was going on there. You'll have to go yourself one day if you haven't been. But among the fun stuff, there was someone with a serious message at the Great American Beer Festival. Rick Like is a cancer survivor and a beer blogger and beer lover, and he's founded something called Pints for Prostates. It's a group that's using beer to get the word out about prostate cancer and early detection of prostate cancer. And we took a couple of minutes to talk to Rick about Pints for Prostates.
So, Rick, tell us about Pints for Prostates.
Well, Pints for Prostates reaches men using the universal language of beer. You know, we have a situation in this country where you see the pink ribbon on a myriad of products, and the blue ribbon, which is the signifies prostate cancer awareness, you hardly ever see. Yet, 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer, but 1 in 6 men will have prostate cancer. So we're here at the Great American Beer Festival, and we're using beer to reach guys and get them to think about their health. I'm a beneficiary of early detection. I was 47 years old. My PSA should have been 0.4. It was 11.1, but I had surgery, and since then my PSA has been 0.0. I had my surgery in April of 08, so I'm doing well.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
So how are you getting the word out this year?
Well, we've done a number of things here at GABF this year. We have a booth here. The Brewers Association has been very, very gracious to us. They gave us a booth last year. We have a booth here this year. So we're talking to as many festival goers who will stop to chat. We also had the Denver Rare Beer Tasting here on Friday. that was our event, and we've done a couple of other things around town. But it's all designed to bring people in over the community of beer and talk about a serious health issue.
And what are you stressing? I mean, what are you telling people about, especially men, what they should be doing?
Well, you know, it's really key for men. If you have a history of prostate cancer in your family, or if you're African-American, you should start getting tested at age 35. You should at least get a baseline PSA. For the rest of us, 40 is the year that we start thinking about this. I never realized that at 47 when I had my cancer. I always thought this was an old man's disease. But when I was in having my surgery, the day I went in, two twin brothers who were 36 were being discharged. So it suddenly became apparent to me that it reaches into younger ages also. So men at 40 really need to start getting tested, schedule an appointment with your doctor, go in, get a physical exam, get the PSA blood test, and you need to do it on an annual basis.
And you guys don't only do things around GABF, you're doing things year-round, right?
Yeah, people can go to our website. It's pintsforprostates.org, all spelled out, or we're also on Facebook, and we have a Twitter feed. And we had 37 events last year around the country. We'll probably have more than 40 before we're done this year. We go to a lot of beer festivals. It's a great place to reach guys. We also have bars and restaurants that will do pub nights for us and things. Just you know, trying to reach their customers and get them to stop and think, and that's all we're trying to do.
There you go. Well, congratulations on your good health and continued good health to you. And keep up the good work.
Hey, cheers, guys. Get tested.
It's a good cause and a good guy. Best of luck again to Rick and Pints for Prostates. So look for an event near you and get tested. Next week, we go to the Sam Adams Long Shot Competition winning announcement. That's another part of the GABF tradition where homebrewers get a chance to shine. Also, Andy and I shot an interview with Kevin DeLang of Dry Dock Brewing for Basic Brewing Video. That's coming up in the next few weeks. Dry Dock, you may remember them from the archives, the video archives. We went there a few years back, but they've grown a bit since we were there last time. So I wanted to check back in and see how things are going. They're going very, very well. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online from us in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Intex Raised Downy Queen Airbed with built-in electric pump and Prism Jazz Stunt Kite Spectrum. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through our associate links on the site, too. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson down in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.